Good afternoon, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the CIR 2024 presentation, full year results conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Rodolfo De Benedetti, Chairman, and Michele Cavigioli, CFO of CIR. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this conference call. I would, as usual, like to go through the presentation that you have on the website. We had our board this morning. We approved the 24 accounts. And I'll just go over them quickly and then leave chances to ask questions. I will go rapidly on the things that are already known, i.e. the Sogefi results and what we have done last year, and maybe just focus on what we approved this morning, which are the consolidated accounts and cost results. So if we start on page four, 24 has been quite an eventful year for CIR. We had a major extraordinary transaction, the sale of the filtration division. We thought at the time that it was a good transaction for us. We're even more convinced today, in view of what's going on in the auto market and the global uncertainties, that this was both a strategically sound decision as well as a financially attractive transaction. We finished to sell our investment in JEDI with the last 5% that was sold last year at a higher price than our balance sheet values. We completed the divestiture of the non-core real estate for 38 million in the course of last year, and we ended the year completing the offer on our own shares, where we were able to buy a total, including the ordinary buybacks, of 167 million shares for close to 100 million euros during the year. So this was a significant return of capital to our shareholders. In terms of the consolidated numbers, I don't want to spend too much time on it because, as you know, they are relatively meaningless given the fact that we consolidate different businesses. But they are, you know, very good, both at the subsidiaries level, because we had higher than budgeted and higher than previous year results in both Sogefi and COS. We had some extraordinary that I mentioned earlier, and we had a very good return from our treasury assets, our financial assets. I'll go through them later. In terms of the outlook that we have approved this morning, in COS, we over the last few quarters we talked about many times about the coming back of the performance of COVID after the severe negative effect following COVID. We had a plan. We are about a year ahead of plan in terms of our 24 results, and so we're pretty satisfied about our ability to increase occupancy, which is a key driver in this business, both in Italy and in Germany, as well as to rise tariffs and to keep a control on the discretionary part of the cost. You know, there are some components of cost, for example, labor cost, which is the biggest one, where, you know, unfortunately we are not in control. We just experienced a very high growth in the last 3 years, and this is continuing, particularly in Germany. This year we had a close to 10% increase in labor costs in 25. So this is clearly a challenge. We've been able to more than make up that in terms of higher tariffs and higher occupancies, but clearly that is that has been a headwind. In terms of so for the year, we expect to continue along the path of an increasing profitability due to those drivers, both in Italy and in Germany. We'll see the 24 results, but we expect we are pretty constructive on 25, and for the time being, the first 2 months of the year are in line with our budget. So JFE operates in a very volatile and difficult market, the auto market. I think anybody that follows the sector knows it well. I think what we did through the filtration and divestiture has been two things. One is to focus on the two residual divisions, focus both financially and managerially. This is particularly important for the turnaround that is ongoing in the suspension component business, which has continued in 24, but clearly, you know, needs to be completed and to be consolidated. And the second thing is that, you know, it is safer to face headwinds and uncertainties and volatilities like the one that we are experiencing today with a macro environment and a you know, global trade environment, which is very much difficult to forecast. It is much safer to be you know, to have those kind of challenges with a very solid balance sheet like we have today. The company has almost no debt, and this clearly allows us flexibility that we had less of before the divestiture of the filtration business. Going on to page six, you have the consolidated P&L. Again, I won't comment a lot on revenues and EBITDA. I think what is probably more relevant is the financial results. As I mentioned earlier, the financial assets result has been particularly good. So we experienced a profit of 30.5 million in 24 compared to 5 million the year before. So a significant increase. And on the right hand side, the lower right hand side of the page, you have the composition of our P&L. You have the net result from continuing operation. This includes our pro rata share of the earnings of both COS and Sogefi, as you can see. They're both significantly higher than the previous year. You have the holding company result, which benefit from the return on the financial assets, the 30 million that I mentioned earlier, minus the costs. And then on the lower part of the chart, you have the extraordinary transactions. So you have the pro rata share, the cheer pro rata share of the filtration sale, 75.7 million, as well as the capital gain on the real estate sale. So the total non-continuing operations, 93 million, and you know, 39 plus 93 is 132, which is our net result. So I'd say, you know, a pretty good year, both on the ordinary front and as well as on the extraordinary one. On page seven, you have the evolution of our net financial position on a consolidated basis. So if you take the bridge on the right-hand side of the page, we go from a slightly negative net financial position to a positive 200 million net financial position, despite having distributed 167 million of funds, both through dividends in Sogefi and COS for the minorities, as well as the buybacks at CHIR, the 100 million that I mentioned earlier. So clearly a more conservative and cash-rich balance sheet, but in the same time, a significant distribution to our shareholders during the year. Now go on page nine, just to remind the buybacks. I mentioned it earlier, about 100 million distributed, spent on those buybacks, buying back 167 million shares, which has allowed us to reduce in a meaningful way our share count with benefits both in terms of earnings per share and NAV per share. Today, we own 3.5% of our capital, 32 million shares, and today's board has decided to restart the ordinary buyback that we had suspended ahead of the extraordinary one at the end of last year. And so from Monday, we will resume that activity. On page 10, you have the holding company balance sheet. On the left-hand side, you have the book value. This is not an NAV. This is really accounting. Those are accounting numbers. So those are the book value that we have for both KOS and Sogefi. They basically increase because of the results of the net assets in the two companies. Private equity increases slightly. There's been close to 10 million distributions. There's been about 6.5 million of positive fair value adjustment and 5 million, roughly, of new investments. Those were pre-existing commitments that were drawn by the funds in which we are invested. Other investments go down almost to zero because of the JV divestiture that I mentioned. And so despite the 100 million spent on buybacks, as you can see, our net financial position at the holding company level increases from 314 at the end of 2023 to 341 at the end of 2024. And you have on the left-hand side the shareholders' equity, both net of treasuries and per share net of treasuries. On page 11, you have a detail of the holding company's P&L. So as I said earlier, income from financial assets was particularly positive. Every asset class performed very well last year. The recurring costs of the holding company were in line with the previous year, stable. We had some non-recurring costs. We had the merger of CIR International into CIR Investimenti. And you have, in a separate line, the CIR International cost. This was a separate company before the merger. We had an operation in Luxembourg. We closed the office. We moved a person from Luxembourg to Milan. The rest of the employees were terminated. And so we think once this is consolidated into our operations in Italy, that the combined cost will be significantly, I mean, the costs that were previously related to CIR International will be substantially lower than before. Not zero, but substantially lower. And then you have the real estate transaction impact. On KOS, page 13, I think you all know KOS, so I won't go through page 13, but maybe focus on 14. So this is the P&L of KOS. As you can see, revenues have increased at a pretty healthy pace. This is, I would say, everything is, correct me, Michele, but everything is organic here. Obviously, there are some greenfields, that add to the perimeter, but there's no acquisition. So the biggest component of this increase is really related to tariff increases that we were able to carry on both in Italy and in Germany. This has had a substantial increase in EBITDA. So as you can see, EBITDA, after the new accounting principle is 164 million. If we go to pre-IFRS 16, we are 83. So this is comparable to the 80 million in 2019. Obviously, there's a bigger company today. So in relative terms, the profitability is still lower, mainly because of Germany and a bit also because of Italy. Probably the most relevant number is the EBIT number, which increases from 53 in 2023 to 67 last year. Financial result is pretty much in line, and this brings the bottom line to a 20.5 million profit compared to a 10.8 without extraordinary of the previous year. So it's almost doubling of net results. I think the significant point here is the increase about 3 percentage points in Italy and about 2 percentage points in Germany of the occupancy of the nursing home business. In Italy, if you take away greenfields, we are pretty much where we were pre-COVID. We still have probably one or two points of possible growth. In Germany, we are slightly behind, but we're getting there a bit more slowly than expected and than in Italy. Rehab increased revenues by 3.4. As you know, rehab is a fully regulated business, so our ability to grow the business is limited because we run structures at full capacity. And so the only way to really grow the business is by growing rates, which are regulated, and they typically increase pretty much in line with inflation. And as I said at the beginning, in terms of outlook for the year, we think we can continue to increase the profitability, particularly in Germany, where we still are not at the levels where we should be. And we think that that is going to come from an increase in occupancy and a continuous increase in tariffs to take into account the cost increases. On page 15, you have a breakdown of the capacity in terms of number of beds split between Italy and Germany. And in Italy, the different businesses, you have the revenue line. So I think it speaks for itself, but as you can see, there's been good growth, particularly in the nursing home business in Italy. There's been an increase in both average and end-of-year occupancy, both in Italy and in Germany. And as you can see, Germany grows revenues by 14%, and this is really a combination of both the increase in occupancy, but more importantly, the increase in tariffs. On page 16, you have a split in terms of, again, Italy and Germany. And you also have the profitability. As you can see, there's been a good increase in Italy. We're still a couple of points below, in percentage terms, a couple of points below the 2019 numbers. We are not there yet with Germany, even though, as you can see, there's been a substantial increase on 2023. So the trajectory is the good one. but we think we have, you know, more to work on Germany. I would say that one, you know, I mentioned the growth in labor cost. I need to mention also the availability of personnel. This is not new, but this is clearly a bottleneck that we are confronted with both in Italy and, more importantly, in Germany. On page 17, going to Sogefi, you have a reminder of the key numbers for the filtration divestiture. I won't go through them. They're known. And unless you have questions, I'll go to page 18, where you have the 24 numbers. Again, those were made public by Sogefi a few weeks ago, so they're of public knowledge since a few weeks now. This is clearly without the divested assets, so this is a like-for-like perimeter. And as you can see, those two divisions, despite the, you know, difficult and challenging year, were able to manage a substantial increase in profitability, even though we had lower revenue. So I think the key here was really cost control, was the result of the actions that were taken in the last few quarters or in the previous year. We had a, you know, a good contribution from outside of Europe, so both Mercosur and China in terms of growth. Not so much NAFTA in terms of growth, but good profitability there. Cash flow was good. Here, you know, the outlook that the board gave a few weeks ago is that we see a fairly difficult and weak car market in terms of production for this year, particularly taking into account our geographic mix. So Europe, which is the bulk of our business, we you know, we believe is going to stay pretty weak. What has been positive has been lower raw material prices. So the spread between, you know, prices and cost has been better last year. And what we expect for this year is a slight decrease in sales because of car production and because of you know, what we expect our clients to generate in terms of demand, but a slightly better EBIT margin. So the two things should roughly compensate. On page 19, you have for the last 2 years and compared to 19, you have a chart with the profitability in terms of EBITDA margins split between the two divisions. So as you can see, you know, Air and Cooling has stayed pretty profitable. I mean, those type of numbers, which is about, you know, 8% EBIT margin, are pretty high compared to, you know, auto part makers, generally speaking, in Europe. There are a few exceptions of, you know, niche players that have higher margins than we have, but most of our competitors have lower margins than the Air and Cooling division. So Air and Cooling has continued to perform, you know, strongly in terms of profitability. As you know, Suspension was in a difficult position a few years ago. We were money losing. We turn around the business. We don't lose money anymore, but still profitability is not enough. And so we still have, you know, work to do there to bring it to satisfactory levels. I would stop here and maybe leave room for your questions.
Thank you. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touch-tone telephone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. Please pick up the receiver when asking questions. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. First question is from Martino De Ambroggi, Equita. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. My first questions are on costs. Number one, in the press release, you talk about a significant increase in revenues and operating results for this year. Could you elaborate a bit more on what is significant for you? The second is on Germany in particular. What is the trajectory for the recovery? Third, you mentioned the issue for the cost of labor. Could you quantify what was the negative impact in 2024 and what you expect in 2025, and elaborate on the scarcity of nursings, if it's close to an end or is still there? And last, on cost or tariff increases, both in Italy and Germany, just to understand where we are today. Thank you.
I ask maybe Michele to start, and I'll complete.
So Germany, as you know, the labor market has been very tight over the last few years. There has been a substantial increase in the mandatory minimum wage that must be paid. And it has been around 20% in the last few years. And we have another 10% for 2025, which has been decided by the authorities. And the problem is that you don't recover that instantaneously on the tariffs, despite the cost-plus mechanism, because the tariff renegotiation happens once a year for every facility. And that's why you have at least 1 year time lag, plus when the increase is quite sharp, then you don't get it on the first round of tariff improvements. So in 2024, we had an impact on costs that was probably close to 10 million versus 2023, which we were able to more than compensate this year through the tariffs. In Germany, we had a quite substantial average tariff increase of 8%. So we had around 3% increase in occupancy, 8% increase in average revenues, and then the rest of the growth is coming from the ramp-up of greenfield that we started in the last few years. For 2025, you asked what does it mean substantial improvement. You know, we normally don't disclose business plan figures, but the trajectory, I can comment on the trajectory on a qualitative basis. Italy is going to further improve on occupancy, but a bit less than last year because we are approaching full activity. Germany has a little bit underperformed in terms of occupancy versus our expectations in 2024, sorry. We expect now the trajectory to recover, although this does not fully depend on us and not even on the demand, because demand is there and strong. It depends mainly on our ability to recruit nurses. The situation is tight. So we have a budget which goes on a similar projection trajectory of improvement versus of what we registered in 2024, but we'd rather not disclose too much about it because it's not fully under our control. But definitely, Germany is where you're going to see most of the financial improvement coming next year, at least in our expectations.
Yeah, maybe just a comment on labor shortages and on increases. You know, unfortunately, I don't think that we can be, you know, very optimistic about the end of labor shortages. I mean, I think this is pretty structural. I don't see how this is going to change short term. Labor increases, cost increases, we recently, a couple of months ago, we had this decision in Germany of a 10% across the board increase of labor cost. This is like a law. I mean, this is an obligation. This is not subject to, company by company labor negotiation. So, unfortunately, those are given, and the only thing we can do is really work with the authorities to make sure that that price increase is reflected in a tariff increase. And, you know, we work in a business where, as Michele was saying, demand is there, and, our structures are almost at full capacity, and so, you know, we should be able to increase tariff if there are increasing costs.
Another item that is worth considering in the performance of 24 is that we had no subsidies anymore this year, whereas in 23 there were still about 8 million. So this kind of improvement is not going to be there next year because we're zero, and it will be zero again in terms of subsidies. But again, Germany has got a lot of potential to improve. That's where we are concentrating our efforts in terms of turnaround. As said, we don't have all the levers under full control, but we were optimistic.
Okay, thank you. If I may, on the tariff increase, you mentioned Germany up 8% in 24. What was the increase in Italy, if any?
In Italy, we had, of course, less. In nursing homes, we had plus 3% occupancy and plus 4% average tariff, which is less than Germany, but much more than what we normally get in an average year, as you know. Whereas in rehabilitation and psychiatry, there was little to no tariff increase. A national reform is long overdue on this. It was supposed to come in 24, maybe will come in 25, but you know, you don't have any certainty in Italy about tariffs.
Yeah, I know. And even more difficult trying to figure out what could be in 25 for both Germany and Italy. I would assume mid-single digit in Germany and small single digit in Italy as a rough indication.
Yeah, that could be a good assumption. In Germany, kind of more predictable. Because you have, I mean, you know what you're asking for, at least. You know what you're entitled to ask for each structure that you own. And then maybe you negotiate, you don't get the full amount, but maybe you get it next year, etc. In Italy, I mean, every region does whatever they want. And the rehab tariffs are managed at the government level in Italy, and they have not been moving for a long time.
Okay, and if I may, a last question on costs. We read in the past few months some pieces of news. I understand that you don't like to comment pieces of news, but Is it right that 25 could be the year in which a discussion with F2I comes to an end to see if you get back the minorities or any other scenario?
We understand the curiosity, but as you can imagine, we cannot comment on this because it's not our decision, and we don't want to, frankly, speculate on what our partner will do.
Okay, I imagine. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you wish to register for a question, please press star and one on your telephone. For any further questions, please press star and one on your telephone. Next question is a follow-up from Martino D'Ambrogi, Equita.
Yeah, on Sogefi, I clearly understand it's impossible to make assumptions on tariffs right now, but I don't know if you have any comment on this. And specifically on tariff, steel is already subject to some tariffs, and I don't know if you already had the possibility to understand if the suspensions business of Sogefi is involved in some way or there is a mitigant making possible to offset any negative impact. And last on Sogefi, you bought some shares in the region of €2 per share. Was just a one-off event, or is it something that you could eventually take again into account?
On tariffs, I think it's too early because, as you know, the U.S. administration is extremely unpredictable and extremely volatile on this subject. And so, they announce something and they change their mind 2 hours later and then they change it again the day after. And so, frankly, very difficult to guess and speculate. For the time being, tariffs with Mexico and Canada, which are the ones that are really relevant for us, were announced but not applied yet. And so we will see. Obviously, it's difficult to factor in and take into account something that hasn't happened yet. Our clients are concerned, obviously, because they have gone public with this. This would be extremely negative for them, starting with the American clients, but for everybody that operates in North America, the supply chain has been built over the last 50 years with plants in Mexico and Canada supplying into the U.S., and so this is obviously a disaster for the industry. Very difficult to figure out, how clients will behave, what will be the burden sharing between supplier and clients. We clearly said that we cannot make predictions today, and I haven't seen anybody in our industry, having made any assumption and prediction, because it's really impossible. It's clearly something which is very dangerous and which can be potentially meaningful. We have about $240 million of U.S. revenues. So for us, the U.S. is relative to our size, is a significant market, which has been a very good market in the last few years. And so clearly we are concerned, but I wouldn't be able to. It would be frankly not serious today to just throw numbers because we don't have a clue, and I don't think anybody has. In terms of your question about Cheer buying Sogefi shares, we did it last summer at a point where we thought that the market reaction to the results were, in our opinion, a bit exaggerated. There are many more uncertainties today than there were 9 months ago, frankly. the outlook for the auto market is worse today than it was last year. And, you know, we never said that we had a policy of increasing our stake in Sogefi. We did it opportunistically. As you have seen, the board of Sogefi has asked the shareholders' meeting to give it the right to do buybacks. This is consistent also with the deleveraging of the balance sheet of Sogefi. We didn't do that before because we thought that the priority was to strengthen the balance sheet and have a solid one given the operating uncertainty. So today we are in a better position, and I think that as always we will be, you know, opportunistically driven by where we see, you know, prices compared to what we think is fair value. But I cannot say more than this at this stage.
Okay, thank you.
Gentlemen, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Thank you very much to everybody for attending, and have a good afternoon.